translation, an enlightened person, fixed in detachment, engages his body in lying down, sitting, walking, bathing, seeing, touching, smelling, eating, hearing, and so on, but is never entangled by such activities. Indeed, remaining as a witness to all bodily functions, he merely engages his bodily senses with their objects and does not become entangled like an unintelligent person. Purport. In the previous chapter, Uddhava asked Lord Krishna why an unenlightened person, just like a conditioned soul, engages in external bodily functions. Here is the Lord's answer. While engaged in bodily functions, an unintelligent person is attached to both the means and the end of material life, and therefore experiences intense lamentation and jubilation on the material platform. A self-realized soul, however, studies the inevitable defeat and suffering of ordinary persons and does not make the mistake of trying to enjoy the bodily functions even slightly. He instead remains a detached witness, merely engaging his senses in the normal functions of bodily maintenance, as indicated here by the word adayan. He engages something other than his actual self in material experience. Evam virakta shayana asanatana majjane darshana sparshana grana bhojana shravanadishu natata padite vidvan tatra tatrana yanguna. Well, we would think that with the development of computer science as it's developing, that people would begin to get the idea that there's a living being, there's a conscious entity that's different than the vehicle. With the idea of creating, as they call it, avatars that can do, or shall we say, experience the different types of sense perceptions that this body can experience. So it's kind of like having out-of-body experience by experiencing vicariously, outside. Vicariously means?
Vicariously means that someone else is experiencing, you're empathetic, you're feeling what they're feeling.
Yeah, okay. So, we would think that would be the case, but the illusion of Maya is so strong that it overwhelms one's intelligence and makes it very difficult, covers one. So he can't understand this simple thing. Actually, it's the most important thing that one needs to learn. At least the first thing that one needs to learn. Because even before Krishna explained who he was, so to speak, that he was explaining himself, he was explaining who Arjuna was. Because just like now we have a lot of people who, they say they believe in God. But what does it mean to believe in God? In their eyes, it doesn't mean much. It just means to go ahead and do everything for sense gratification, just like everyone else. It's very hard to tell the difference by one's behavior, one who supposedly believes in God and one who doesn't. They're both sitting at the same bar. They're doing the same things. And on one side of the war, on the other side of the war, whoever wins, they do the same thing. So there's not really... It's difficult to distinguish on that basis, but the Bhagavad Gita begins with a fresh approach that, first of all, let's understand who we are. Who are you? I recall one time I was in London for the Rath Yatra festival, and after the festival, after the parade, the festival was held at Battersea Park. And we were sitting with devotees and taking prasadam, having a good time. And some very rowdy, rough fellows came up, sat down. And they obviously were not in a submissive mood to hear. They said, "Who's that statue?" They pointed to Lord Jagannath. Said, "Who is that?" Then they added a little bit, "Is that your God?" So I was somehow or other deputed to reply to their inquiry. And I said, first of all, let's understand who we are. Have you ever thought about that? So somehow or other we piqued their interest. And then we discussed about the nature of the soul. And once they got some idea, a little bit, or some recognition about who they might be as not being matter and something spiritual and supernatural and things like that, then they were more submissive. So this is how Krishna starts off Bhagavad Gita. You are Ashochanam Ashochastvam Pragyavadam Shabhasas Katasam Agatasam Shah Nanashochandipan. You are supposed to be, you think yourself learned, but actually a learned person doesn't lament as you are lamenting. He doesn't become overwhelmed as you are becoming overwhelmed with affections and lamentation and all these types of... So we can analyze things in that way, that when one becomes overwhelmed with lust, so what is that? How is it that lust becomes such a powerful force that it causes a man or causes a group or a country to act in such strong ways, and sometimes it even leads to violence or other kinds of problems. It's hard to, when someone is lustful, then he doesn't act in a way that's necessarily in his best interest. There are so many examples of one person becomes lusty after someone else's wife or someone else's husband, and they engage in lustful activities. And when the other party, the party that wasn't consulted, finds out, then it becomes a bloody scene. They come and they kill the... So if the person in the beginning could have thought things through a little more carefully and thought, well, this is a dangerous proposition I'm getting into here. For a few moments of pleasure, I could be risking my life. But they become overwhelmed. So what is that that causes one to do that? Well, it's a misidentification of oneself. One is not He doesn't understand who he is. He can't separate himself from the feelings or the impulses that he's experiencing through the body. He's thinking that this is me, that this desire that I'm feeling, which is manifest in these type of things too, like seeing and hearing, touching, smelling. These things are generating lusty feelings, and he's thinking, this is me feeling this. Therefore, how can I deny to fulfill or to try to fulfill these desires when actually this is me? Me, it's actually in my best interest. Therefore, it's hard for people to understand why they should renounce any kind of sense pleasure. Because they think, well, why should I renounce something that's so natural for me? But they don't realize that it's only natural when one misidentifies himself as being the body. That attraction that one feels, or that hatred that one feels, these things are only based on the perceptions through the bodily senses. And, of course, with using the mind. But when one realizes that he's not the body, he's just a passenger riding in the body, as Lord Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, Dehino, what is it? Dehino smenyata de komanam jova. No, the verse I'm thinking of is, he's... He's riding in this body, yantra rudhani maya, as seated as on a machine made of material energy. So this body is a machine, yantra, and he's riding on the machine. That's the point here. And if we can understand that, then we can separate ourselves from the impulses born of material energy. There's a bit of Sarvan Prakriti Jayagunai. He has to separate himself from these desires. He can say no to a desire. Actually, everyone says no to certain desires. We all understand that to some degree under certain circumstances. For example, if we're driving on the highway at a high speed and we see a beautiful sunset, well, we have to say no to our senses. Don't look. Don't look at that sunset because it's dangerous. If you're looking at that beautiful sunset and you become too absorbed in it, then you can have an accident and it'll be fatal. So therefore, we learn to say no, at least some people do. Of course, there are many people who die on the highways because they couldn't say no to the desire to see something, whether it's a beautiful sunset or a beautiful member of the opposite sex. Or
their eyelids.
Or they're looking at... now they have television also. Computers and television and cell phones. So many things that you can look at. They can't say no. Because they're thinking this is pleasure and this is the only pleasure I can get. What a sad state of affairs. If the only pleasure that can be obtained is pleasure that can be perceived through these material senses, then it's always going to be very limited and very meager, and it's not going to give any real pleasure to the self. Because Ataksi Krishna Nama Adi Nad Pavet Gran Indriyai Sevan Mukhi Hijibado Swayam Vevas Puratita. That eliminates the greater spectrum of pleasure that can be achieved by a soul. A soul has the ability to to experience something supernatural. But according to science, modern science, and according to people in general, they don't accept that there are supernatural things that one can experience. You have to be satisfied with 3D or 4D. 4D is, you know, another sense, like a smell or something else they add. At least in the movies, that's what they do. So they're still restricting the experience or the pleasure to these senses, which are just not able to comprehend or to experience the ultimate pleasure. The ultimate pleasure is when one is completely detached from the bodily conception and one can enjoy on the supernatural, spiritual level. And the pleasure there is what that one can achieve is unlimited, because the soul, being spiritual, is not limited by time and space and other restrictions, like heat, for example. Even if one wanted to enjoy heat, he wants to get very, very close to the fire. If he gets too close, then his body catches on fire and it becomes a very painful experience. But actually the soul can experience a pleasure from heat when he's not restricted by this body. For example, even in the sun, there are living entities that are living in the sun. What's the temperature of the sun? How many? Thousands and thousands of degrees. But they're living very happily there, enjoying the heat, because they have a body that is more suited for that. The subtle material bodies, the demigods' bodies, are more subtle. Therefore, they can experience more pleasure, more material pleasure, than the body that we have, this earthly body. Their body is more, you could say, it's more similar, it's more likened to the spiritual body. Therefore, they can enjoy longer lifespan, more different types of pleasures, and those who are aware of this, they try to go to the heavenly planets to get these kind of heavenly bodies for more enjoyment. But they're still not the most intelligent, because they're still limiting themselves to bodies that have to die. Whereas the Gyanis are more intelligent, because they say, no, we're not this body, we should get free from all bodily conceptions and be situated in the Brahman, the effulgence, where there's no death, there's no destruction. But still, that's not the ultimate intelligence, because they're restricting their personal nature, the nature of the soul. And Krishna explains this, that Tevaham jatunasam natam neme janadipaha jayvanabhavishimak sarve vayamatakva. That the soul is a person. In the past, we were individual persons. In the present, we were individual persons. And in the future, we'll be individual persons. So the real experience of the soul is free from the misconception of being the body and fixed in the correct conception that I am an eternal spirit soul and servant of Krishna. That is the And then, when one has that realization, then even though he's in the body, jivan mukta sujate, he is not entangled. Jivan mukta means he's liberated even though he's in the body. And he can use the body for so many activities, just like all these here we can think of. Lying and sleeping. He can engage in sleeping. And just like the Vaishnavas do, they sleep for Krishna. They sleep to refresh the body. It's like when you're using a machine and it gets overheated, sometimes you have to turn it off and let it sit. Computer, sometimes you have to do that, it gets overheated. So the body, and the more advanced Vaishnavas, they're so attuned to how to utilize the body and mind in the best possible way for the service of Krishna, that they minimize these things. Nidra hari hari kari vijito chakyanta dino chayo. Six Goswamis, they were restricting their eating and their sleeping. Sleeping was practically 1.5 hours a day and eating very little, just to keep the body and soul together. That was the idea, to keep it fit for serving. Therefore, sleeping is not maya. If one is sleeping for the purpose of rejuvenating the body or the mind, just to the amount that is necessary. If we sleep more than that, then we become influenced by the mode of ignorance. We're again influenced by matter, trying to enjoy this ignorant pleasure of sleep. Asana, sitting. This is the perfection of sitting that we're doing now. We're sitting and hearing about Krishna, discussing, or chanting. Not watching ordinary movies or ordinary discussions. If you go to some educational institution, you can sit down for years and listen, but it will be a disaster because you will be misusing the sitting tendency. It's not that simply sitting is good. Sitting can be utilized in the service of Krishna. If Krishna is the topic of one's sitting, a devotee, therefore, he doesn't do anything unless Krishna is involved. If someone asks him, "Would you like to go for? Would you like to go sit down?" Well, what will we do sitting? What will be the activity of our sitting? He wants to know. "Would you like to go for a walk?" Well, what will we do when we walk? He wants to know, is Krishna involved in this activity? So this is the art of yoga. Learning from the spiritual master how to utilize everything, as Srila Rupa Goswami has explained, that everything can be used in the service of the Lord, and one should renounce such things, thinking that they're material. The impersonalists think that all these things that are described here are material. Sitting and sleeping, walking, bathing. It's all material, they think, because it's using the senses or the mind. But a devotee, no, he doesn't reject any of these if they can be used for Krishna. Bathing, for example, helps one to understand Krishna by keeping the body clean. Actually, it makes it easier to understand the Absolute Truth, because this is a function of the mode of goodness. And when one is in the mode of goodness, all the senses of the body, they become enlightened, they become realized. Darshana, seeing. We use the word darshana, to see the Lord. That's the real darshana. But unfortunately, people are not very interested in seeing the Lord. They'd rather see something else. And they use their seeing power. And they become entangled. Just like the moths. They like to see bright things, like lights. You see the moths, they always like to go up to the light bulbs. And sometimes they get so close to the light bulb, they get right on the bulb and they burn. And then you see them falling down to the ground. Or they go into the fire. That seeing, we all like to see bright things, but we have to see the bright, the beautiful moon-like face and lotus-like feet of the Lord that are very shining and bright and attractive. Just like now, the Lord is glowing. This is the kind of darshan that we have to cultivate. Someone may say, well, I'm not attracted. I'd rather see something else. But with intelligence, we can say, yes, but what will be the effect of seeing these other things? I'll become entangled. Bhagyajaya. And if I see the form of the Lord, then I'll get free from the material entanglement. But someone may say, but then you're attached to seeing Krishna. What about that? That's still attachment. But attachment to seeing the form of Krishna frees one from the material attachment. And he doesn't have to become subjected to birth and death anymore, or all the suffering. So in other words, one attachment leads to liberation. The other attachment leads to bondage and suffering. Sparshana, touching. In the Bhagavatam it is said that Maharaj Ambarish, was it? He engaged his different senses, how he engaged the different senses in the service of the Lord. He engaged Savaimana, Krishna Padada Vindaya, engaged his mind in thinking of the Lord, and his head bowing down before the Lord, his eyes in seeing the beautiful form of the Lord. Touching, you can engage in touching the body of the Lord, even. That's what the pujaris do. They're touching the body of the Lord, they're bathing the Lord. So this is considered to be a great honor, a perfection of using the sense of touch, to touch the form of the Lord. Grana, smelling the incense or the tulsi offered to the lotus feet of the Lord. Bhojana, eating prasadam that has been honored by the Lord. Lord has eaten, and now we take the food that he's eaten. Shravana, hearing the Lord's name and his words, his pastimes. Well, this is how we should practice. Learn how to engage in all our senses and all these things. And once you've learned that, then you'll be free from Maya. Maya will not be able to touch you. So if there are any questions.
Yes, I found, thank you very much. I found this idea of vicarious enjoyment very interesting. Because what you're saying there is that in our ordinary consciousness, we're actually trying to enjoy vicariously because we're not the body, and we're identifying with the body and all the enjoyment, pains, and pleasures. We're thinking, that's me. I'm enjoying suffering that way. But we're enjoined to absorb our minds in Krishna and his name and his Leela, and in this way, to really enjoy. Just to sit there and to hear Krishna Leela, the great devotees, they can do it for hours and experience. So to an outsider, that would say, yeah, you're just enjoying that vicariously. You're sitting there and Krishna's enjoying, you're hearing the story. And so it's just like, you know, we enjoy vicariously through the video game or the novel or the movie, so you're enjoying Krishna Leela. So what's the difference?
Yeah, the difference is, That
Thank you. It's a very nice point you've allowed us to speak on, is that the pastimes of the Lord are always going on. They're nitya-lila. So they're not in the past. And they're not in another place, because they're not limited by time and space. Therefore, and the experience that one has when he's actually hearing properly or purely about the...
Take it out. Go.
Hearing about the pastimes of the Lord is that that pastime is going on, and the person is allowed to enter into that pastime. He's not restricted. He's not an outsider. Yeah. So he can actually join that pastime. I was reading also Srila Rupa Goswami was explaining that even when an audience sees a drama that depicts the pastimes of the Lord, the audience also gets swept up into the rasa. Rasa means the relationship. They're actually involved in it. So that's the difference, that when we enjoy through the body or through, like when we watch a movie, we're enjoying through someone else's body. He's enjoying the girl, and I'm getting some pleasure out of him enjoying the girl. Actually, it doesn't even make sense. I'm paying to watch someone else enjoy, and I'm trying to cash in on his enjoyment with the beautiful girl. I probably wouldn't be able to get such a beautiful girl, but because he's in the movie, he's doing it, therefore I'm paying for that. It's not a good use. But the difference is, here in the spiritual world, you can actually enjoy, but the difference is, he doesn't want to enjoy Krishna's object of enjoyment, but rather he enjoys Krishna's enjoying. He's satisfied to see Krishna enjoying, because actually Krishna is the enjoyer and I'm not. He realizes, if I try to enjoy this, it's ludicrous, because I have no ability to enjoy it. But Krishna can actually enjoy it, and therefore he's not envious. It's like the dog. Sometimes we use the dog as an example. The dog is not envious of his master. He doesn't try to take the position of the master. The master, you see, when the man walks, he wants to go this way, that way, and the dog agrees to go. So, in that mood of agreeing to be the subordinate, there's great pleasure, especially when the master is Krishna, because Krishna is the perfect master and able to give the servant complete pleasure and satisfaction. Thank you very much for that question. Any other?
I would like to add that if someone offers that argument that enjoying sensually is more of a direct enjoyment, then how is it that the pleasure feels so remote?
So remote.
Yeah, and I mean, everyone has that experience. It's so remote, and then on top of it, it's imperfect. It's really frustrating.
Well, they might say, well, you haven't... I could teach you some things about how to enjoy it more.
Why? Tried.
When you were mentioning that point about Krishna's pastimes, and they're like continuously going on, and you were saying about like how certain... didn't clearly understand how you said like certain bodies can experience their pastimes.
The soul, because they're spiritual, and we're all spiritual, we're compatible with those spiritual, like we can enter into those pastimes. When one becomes purified, he can actually enter into those. So in the spiritual, in his spiritual form, he can enter. Okay.
You were talking about desire, so I'm kind of curious about this kuta. Kuta is one of the reactions to an activity, is that the propensity, sinful propensity or propensity to commit it again. So is this kuta a karmic reaction? So I guess my question is, do karmic reactions come in the form of desires? Or how does that work? What is this?
In other words, if in the past I engaged in some, let's say, negative activity, now do I get the negative result that it will affect my desire?
Yeah, or desires, are some desires within the heart?
Well, the desire actually comes from the soul.
Right.
The living entity has the desire. But he'll be influenced by a mode. And the mode will be affected by his past. If he engaged in particular activities, he will be put in a situation and governed by particular modes. And then the tendency will be greater to be affected by those modes, and thus one's desire will be affected by that.
Yeah, why is that? I guess I'm trying to understand.
That's the punitive system. Or you could say that's the system of reward. Krishna says, yayatamam prabhajate. As they desire something, then I will give it to them. Krishna wants to fulfill their desires. So if one wants to engage in a particular type of ignorant type of activity, then the Lord will give him even better. For example, if someone wants to eat flesh, like now they go to the Brazilian restaurants and they see the animal spinning on the thing there and then they cut it. And so they're trying to enjoy the pleasure of eating flesh. The Lord sees that, but they're not very good at it because they don't have claws and they don't have big fangs, and there's so many conditions that they have to undergo. It has to be cooked, but why not give them a body where they they're not restricted by any circumstance. They've got the teeth and the nails. They can just rip apart an animal right on the spot and eat it fresh. You don't have to wait for it to be cooked and seasoned or anything. So then they get the tiger's body. That means they're put under those modes of material nature where they can do that. They can enjoy it.
So part of the reward or reaction to karma is the actual reaction, and then plus Krishna offers inspiration to perform it again because you desired it in the past.
So yes. He gives you a good opportunity to perform it again. And again and again and again. And those who are averse to him, who deep down in their heart they have an aversion to God or his control, he says, for them I perpetually cast them down into lower species. So they can just go on like this practically forever.
What about a devotee who wants both spiritual elevation but at the same time wants material?
And he becomes a demigod. That's what the demigods say. They would have that mishra of bhakti. They want to serve Krishna, but they also want to enjoy. So they get, the Lord accommodates that. You want to enjoy and you want to serve me? Okay, become Indra. Indra has lots of opportunity for sense gratification, but he also has great opportunity for service.
And from there it can go both ways.
Yeah. If you're in the heavenly planets and you're good fortune is to associate with pure devotees, then you can go back to the spiritual world. But if not, then you have to shine punye marcha loko vishanti, then you have to come down again to this planet, this material, earthly sphere. I think we'll stop there. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.